This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right. Well, it's time for another episode of Lucha Undead. Get to know the PTBN PWO, and this is a Back to the Roots, a PWO edition, because this is a guy from a show that was one of the major, I guess, podcasts that got me really excited about PWO to begin with. I've got Dave Musgrave, Wrestling Culture. Dave, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. So we already kind of started it. I think people are aware. But you host Wrestling Culture with Mr. Dylan Hales.
Yes, I do.
And
for about 5 years now,
actually. Yeah, and it was one of the quintessential shows that really, I guess, attacked the concept of what a wrestling podcast could be. Pull back the curtain, as we were talking before we started, and mentioned that sometimes you guys are still figuring out what wrestling culture is, and that's what I think I love about the show. I mean, what was the first conversation you guys had to start that show? This is just a crazy thing, but to be like, hey, let's do a podcast where we don't talk about anything in particular, but we kind of talk about everything.
I think it was, I mean, our first show was on the Hall of Fame, and basically, those shows are very much like the first year Dylan and I knew each other. We was basically Facebook adding after we traded some DVDs, and basically there's many conversations out there. If there is any, I doubt anyone. There's no record of them, although I'm sure you can troll back far enough on Facebook. But essentially, the first year was us having conversations like that all the time, and except it was always text. And the first time we actually did a podcast was actually the second time we'd ever spoken. I think a big inspiration for me was definitely film podcasts. I was listening to one called Film Spotting a lot at that point, as well as Slash Film. I don't know if you ever listened to either of those, Film Spotting or Slash Film. They're both quite good. And they are pretty much exactly what I was trying to do all the time, just trying to always have a different kind of essay topic, trying to, I don't know, wrestling auteur theory sounds really snobby and stuff like that. But, you know, trying to look at things, I don't know. I think we were trying to have intellectual conversations without calling it that, without trying to sound smart. We were just trying to, you know, hammer things out as much as we could. So.
Yeah, no, and I mean, having a conversation, like you said, that comes across smart, that's just the way that you communicate, that's just the way that you communicate. I mean,
yeah.
You know, you're having the conversations that, like you said, you already had on the Facebook group, but you just decided to kind of invite everybody else in to get, you know, kind of inviting them into the conversation, at least just to be a fly on the wall for it, which is, yeah, like I said, it's really interesting because it does, I find that you guys really did in some ways inform the conversation for people to have a little bit more deeper kind of conversation about wrestling and not feel like it has to either be all 100% only breaking down matches. It can also be kind of, I don't know, wrestling theory, if you think about it, like there's the concept of time.
That's pretty much exactly what it would be. Yeah. Wrestling theory. And, I'd still love to sometime in our lives, me and Dylan write a book together. I think we both ADD each other out for sure, but, I think it'd be a blast if we did. So.
Yeah, and I think it may, you know, I think people would definitely be interested in something like that. Although with the way the medium is now with podcasts and video, kind of streaming videos and everything else, I almost kind of like, if you go back and listen to all the wrestling cultures, it is kind of like the audiobook in a way. I mean, if you guys
that's a good way to think of it.
Yeah, if you put it together, it could become chapters of a story if you just kind of, you know, did a little connective tissue to make everything work. Because I think, yeah, a big thing for you guys is the Hall of Fame episodes. I almost said issues. The Hall of Fame episodes where you guys kind of go ahead.
We both have lots of issues when it comes to it, but yes.
Yeah. And just breaking down the kind of what the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame even means on top of, like, which guys are nominated this year, which you guys would vote for. Because you guys both do the kind of reveal your ballots as well as just go over everything.
We did our first episode was a Hall of Fame show 5 years ago, about September 2011. And since then, we've both become actual voters for the Hall of Fame as well. So, yeah, we definitely run down our ballots. And, I mean, that was inspired by, you know, film podcasts where they do your best of, and also just listening to some of the old Wrestling Observer Live, where Dave Meltzer would do that with people actually in the wrestling business, as opposed to Dylan.
Yeah, in a way, I mean, the fact that...
Although he seems to be in the wrestling business these days.
So. Yes, and according to some people on Twitter, he's a Southern Mark who thinks that he influences the bookings of indie promotions. So if you believe that, then he does influence the wrestling business so much so that he's affecting people's entire careers. But like you said, you became voters. So in a way, I mean, you're not just two random guys talking about it, because there's something there that you're actually one of who, I don't know if the numbers are out there about exactly how many people vote or not, but you know, it's not a large group. It is a kind of a minority of people that are actually voting in it.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're talking top end 300 people. Right.
Right. And that's including, you know, journalists, historians, ex-wrestlers, current wrestlers. So if you think about it, it's like any member of that group is involved in wrestling to such a degree that it's hard to just call you just some guy.
Yeah, no, I think we did quite a bit to establish ourselves in the years that we've been doing this kind of stuff together, and it's really been a lot of fun. I mean, he's a great friend. We've been good buddies now for about 6 years. We've known each other for about a year when we started doing the show, and we actually got to meet as well, and yeah, I mean, he's been there for me, and I've been there for him, and but I mean, wrestling is always what it comes down to, as far as, you know, just that's what we love to chat about. So, and the Hall of Fame, I'm really excited for Hall of Fame season this year.
Yeah, I am as well, and I don't know if you mind breaking the scoop, but there will be another Wrestling Culture about the Hall of Fame, as there seems to be every year. So I don't know if that's much of a scoop.
Yeah, that's the plan. We've never not pulled one off, so we've talked about doing it, and yeah, that should be coming up shortly. I think as soon as the issue is out, I'd hope we'd probably pull one off around that. So,
okay, so this will be
not as soon as the issue comes out. Sorry, as soon as the ballot comes out.
Well, this will definitely come out before then, so people can just kind of salivate and get ready for that. But so you go from the first episode talking about the Hall of Fame, and I mean,
and then we moved on to our next topic, was whether Terry Funk was the greatest of all time. And then we would just kind of fire topics at each other about what we wanted to talk about. Our third episode is possibly my favorite. It's one we did with Kurt Brown on the wackiest gimmicks we think of in wrestling history. And do you know who Kurt is?
Yes.
Yeah. If you're doing a Lucha podcast with a Lucha theme at all, you'd have to know who he is, basically. He's one of the best guys around, and that was such a fun 2-hour conversation, and my poor wife got to listen to it all day afterwards. And I can still pop that one on and have a great time just listening to the three of us go on. Kurt, and I'd never actually spoken to Kurt by voice before that, but we been in touch for quite a few years, actually coming out of when he did the Hall of Fame write-up on Mark Carter Young, and I got in touch with him after that. He was recovering from cancer at the time, and we got to be buddies, and then yeah, that was just such a blast. I don't know if you can track down a copy of it. It's on PTBN, so
yeah, I think everything
that
now.
Was a blast. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so you
thanks to Parv for doing a lot of that work. So
yeah, Parv, who was on the original episode of this podcast forum. I mean, this is another thing we talked about before, but the prototype episodes before this show became what it is now, or this part of the show became what it is now. Parv was on the first one ever, because he is so influential, especially on the PWO side, and it's nice to see him getting his voice back out there again. I think he took a little break after Greatest Wrestler Ever, which a lot of people did. So it's exciting to see Where the Big Boys Play is another episode coming out. He's still working on his music projects. But so you and Dylan just kind of give each other's ideas for show concepts, and then say like, okay, yeah, we'll do that. Or is it just...
Yep, we both come up with a lot of ideas. We've got way more ideas than we've ever done shows on.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. How do you kind of weed through which ones actually get made and which ones don't? Has there ever been a contentious episode? Is there one that you're just kind of chomping at the bit, you wish that you could make, and you can tell Dylan is either dragging his feet not even if he's being outward about it, although with it being Dylan, I would assume that he would be pretty, you know, outward and just let you know if he didn't want to do it. Or has there been any situation like that, or one that maybe you don't even know if there's an issue, but you just have never gotten around to it, anything like that?
Yeah, there's no real, like, behind the music kind of stuff going on, but there's the big one is to eventually do the interview with Lee Burke. I'm going to probably reach out to him again anyways, because he made an appearance in the Maritimes just this past week, and I read an article on him, so I talk to him a couple times a year, so I'm probably going to give him a call anyways. That's one we both definitely want to do, and it's just been a matter of having... You know, we haven't done many shows. We've kind of had an Undertaker-type schedule pretty much since my parents passed away, actually. That kind of really set back our schedule for a long time, and then stuff going on for Dylan as well. So, but, you know, we have never said we're not doing the show, and it's still a big thing for us. And, yeah, I think getting the Leo Burke show done would be a big one. We've got a Brian Pillman one we want to do. We actually need to do one on our buddy Pat Prod's Montreal DVDs as well. So.
So you've got stuff all lined up. So there's never been a topic maybe that you weren't interested in actually doing that was brought up in a conversation?
I'm sure there's definitely been those in both directions, and some that just we couldn't quite form the concept on. But nothing that ever was nothing that was contentious, I wouldn't
say. Oh, yeah, no, I know it can sound almost salacious, like I'm asking for dirt, which I wouldn't.
To be fair,
I wouldn't mind. I'm not like against the idea of some dirt because there are some juicy stories from PTBN, PWO past that I do want to eventually get, but that's from different people. Obviously, you guys, especially you, just seem very even keel, and there wouldn't be anything like that. But I think people.
Yeah, I try to definitely take the view that anything about wrestling is definitely it's. It's first world problems that we have.
Yeah, exactly, and it's kind of like it's kind of like this is all for fun, honestly. So there's no reason to get all worked up.
And that's why I actually, if there was ever an opportunity to monetize any of the stuff I've done, I would be pretty hesitant about it because then it becomes serious. Right,
and then you owe people something. So. That's the toughest part to me. Yeah. It's like when you don't. As we're talking right now, I think maybe the week before this. This Week in Wrestling didn't come out, which I'm one of the co-hosts on with Pete and Johnny Sorrow, and we just couldn't make it work because, you know, Pete's work schedule life came up, and if I knew that there was people paying for it, and, you know, I know there's people expecting it, so there's probably already people that are kind of like, hey, why didn't that show? But if I knew that there was someone, even one person paying $1 for it, I would have been like, we got to figure something out. We got to make this happen. And I wouldn't be able to just as easily go, listen, it's not coming out, you know, And yeah, so once you start monetizing, then you feel like you're beholden to people, and it just turns into a whole nother ball of wax, kind of, you know?
Yeah, and then where it is now, like, I mean, I submit a lot of stuff to Brad with Place to Be Nation, and I mean, that guy makes you feel like you're the greatest writer in the history of the planet, just reviewing shows. I don't know, he's just so appreciative of everything, and. You know, I mean, if you got into a situation where it's a job, you might not have that feeling, right?
Yeah, that's
true. You know, I figure I'll leave my career where it is, and this is my fun stuff. So
yeah, that's true. I mean, to get back to it, like I said, salacious stuff isn't really the point, but I think people, especially myself, I just love minutiae.
I didn't feel like you were doing
got
it either. So
okay,
don't worry
about that. But me myself, and this show is nothing if not just essentially a chance for me to kind of tickle my own fancies. I love the minutiae and the details. So if you know of any topic, like I understand if you can't remember anything, but like a topic maybe that came up that you guys just couldn't make work, or that you just didn't. Maybe you could have made it work, but you just weren't into the concept at all, so you just kind of, not necessarily tanked it, but you didn't put as much effort into trying to put it together as you could have. Is there anything like that you can remember?
I think the better examples would be ones that are still kind of in the tank that we just haven't gotten together on to do, but that we definitely want to do. Like, one we want to do is, I call it the Requiem for a Tag Team episode, where we talk about what makes a great tag team, you know, with... I don't know, Doug Furness and Dan Crawford being kind of one of the prototypes of two guys who aren't alike who make a fantastic tag team, right? So that's one we've talked about doing in the past year or so. We do talk about doing episodes. It tends to be something more pressing and timely when we do get together on it. So, yeah, that's the biggest thing, is that there's ones that we still have out there. It's like, oh yeah, I still want to do that one. I still want to do the Pillman one.
I mean, as a fan of the podcast, I'm just going to put this out here. You guys wouldn't be as pressed to do episodes that are based around stuff that's timely at the time that you're actually doing them if you just did them a little bit more frequently. I'm just going to say that.
Yeah, I agree.
If you could put something together and make it a little bit more frequently, even just, you know, a slight bit more, I think everyone would appreciate that. But we're going to take a quick break, listen to the plugs from PTBN, as everyone's used to, and then we'll come back and we'll get into maybe some of your wrestling fandom.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you're subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Just head to iTunes today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be podcast feed, the PWO PTBN feed, PTBN Pop, and of course the Kevin Kelly Show feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Some really great stuff. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. Thanks for being a fan of professional wrestling. More importantly, thanks for being a fan and supporter of the Place to Be Nation.
All right, Dave, so we're back from the break, and I wanted to talk about your fans, specifically the fact that I know that you are a Canadian citizen, and I know that I've heard you mention a lot of times, you're talking already about the Maritimes, Leo McGuirk, different... Oh, sorry, Leo Burke. I don't know where I'm at. and, you know, the Montreal book from Pat LaProde. And then I also know that you were the first person that I had heard talking about Speedball Mike Bailey that wasn't Kevin Steen. So I was really excited when I had known that there was, like, somebody else out there in our kind of sphere of wrestling fandom that was also a fan of Speedball Mike Bailey. So that was always really cool.
Yeah, he's fantastic. I got to see him coming up as well.
Yeah, so I always thought that that was awesome. So kind of let's talk about what got Dave into wrestling fandom, into wrestling in general, before you kind of turned into the orator of the smart wrestling conversation.
Well, it goes back to when I was – my first memories of wrestling are watching it, seeing it on TV in the Maritimes. So I'm actually from Nova Scotia, island called Cape Breton, which if you know of Cape Breton, you know what I'm referring to right away. It's one of these places. It's kind of like picture Detroit without the business. Detroit doesn't have the business anymore. So it's a lot like Detroit, you know, just completely Caucasian otherwise. But it's, you know, it's a place that's really been economically repressed after have been a real industrial area in decades past, right? So, so that's where I'm from. I've lived in Toronto for 16 years now, but my first memories are seeing Atlantic Grand Prix Wrestling on TV down there. My memories aren't of seeing Leo Burke on there. My memories are of seeing the Cuban Assassin. He's the guy who definitely stands out if you're from out there. He had this wild, crazy hair. He looked like every bit of the Cuban madman that he apparently genuinely is, but apparently a really good guy as well. He's having some health issues now, sadly. But that's my first memories of seeing it. And then my first major memory of just besides just happening to be on TV is that we were, it was a summer night because I know it was a summer night because it was always summer down there. They had a seasonal model for wrestling delivery. Is that, they would basically run in between the hockey seasons. And the midgets were in town. So my first big wrestling night was going to see Atlantic Grand Prix Wrestling with Sky Lolo and Farmer Pete. And that was a show that I have a lot of memories of. It was a lot of fun. And I also remember that a guy named Man Mountain Mike was on it, and I didn't realize till years later, after I'd become a major fan for a number of years, that it was actually Mockin' Singh. Mike Shaw that had been playing that character. So so that was probably around the summer of 1983 or 1984, I would guess. But it was basically the winter of 1985 turning 1986, because I'm 41 now, just, you know, dating myself here, that we got a VCR, which meant we had a certain cable converter that we could get, which gave us a station which had Rockin' Wrestling and Superstars of Wrestling. So that's when I started watching it. And I've been hooked ever since. I started watching it constantly then. It really hit another level about 2 years later when a lot of people were getting out of wrestling by that point. But I actually rented Starrcade 86 and Starrcade 87. So as opposed to a lot of people who think that Starrcade 87 wasn't a great show, it was just the ultimate to me because it was different wrestling. And I had a blast watching it. And that's when I started collecting Pro Wrestling Illustrated. This is the summer of 1988. So I started collecting Pro Wrestling Illustrated, eventually was subscribing to the weekly thing, became more and more a fan, got in the internet in 96 when I was finishing up university for the first time, and just sunk deeper and deeper down the rabbit hole ever since. Got into Japanese wrestling around 15 years ago and started subscribing to The Observer since then as well. Probably around 10 years ago, I started doing a fair amount of corresponding for The Observer as well. And that's where I really kind of built up any name that I may or may not have in wrestling, is kind of corresponding for Dave Meltzer. I wrote the Ring of Honor TV reports for a couple of years there. And people recognize my name from me writing for that newsletter. And I've actually gotten to meet Dave and think the world of him. And yeah, I really, really credit any kind of name I have to that. And then started doing the Wrestling Culture podcast 5 years ago with my good buddy Dylan Hales. And I'm kind of known for doing like just kind of crazy amounts of research, just like writing up. I'll do a write up on like someone's month by month their entire career. And I've done that for the Hall of Fame seasons. I did that for Ben and Mike Sharp is probably the most notable one I did. And I think some support, I would like to say that some support that I think they've gotten for the Hall of Fame is at least partially due to some of my writing. So
yeah, no, and I really do love the deep kind of introspective stuff that you do. I think it's super great. I look up to a lot of people do that, and I try to do stuff like that every now and then, but I either just get sidetracked or I just lose interest, or sometimes I even do like kind of look at guys like you and like Brandon Howard and maybe Mookie Ghana and other guys who kind of get really deep into stuff like that, Chris Zellner. And I stopped myself midway through and I'm like, God, if I could only like just get one of them to do this project instead, I think it would come out better. So like I almost stopped myself because of that. Like I was trying to work on a comparison of like every youngest WWE champ of all time. That was like the last project I was like interested in working on, to like see kind of like the arc of what happens when someone is the new youngest champ, like how quickly they were pushed, how much time they had spent in the company, how did they draw, you know what I mean? Like comparisons that way, because I just thought it was a really interesting topic to think about, like how these guys who kind of are phenoms, and now I think the record is probably about where it's going to be, because I don't think they could really break a guy. I think what the youngest champ right now is like someone who's been 19. Or no, that can't be, but probably like 20.
Oh, okay. If we're talking WWE, then... That's what I thought.
Yeah, WWE, like their main champion, which is like, if I remember, it's either Brock or Randy Orton at this point, and it was like 20.
It's Randy, and he was 24.
Oh, was he really? Oh, I thought he was younger. Okay, well then maybe I'm wrong. But also with the way their developmental system works, I just think it would be really difficult for them to ever really break that record at this point. Again, which they might, but I just think it's something interesting to think about. Like,
yeah. They'd really have to be trying to do
so. Yeah, it'd have to have been someone that's like, or I guess it could be someone, if there was someone like a Trevor Lee who also happened to be like 6'8 and jacked and had that kind of pedigree of being a third or fourth generation guy and really just caught onto wrestling super fast, something like that I could see happening, but I almost still see that they wouldn't trust them to like ever put...
Can I clarify something you said there? Does Trevor Lee have that kind of background, like third or fourth generation?
He's a second generation worker, and he caught on to wrestling so quickly that like.
He's amazing. Yeah. I just didn't know I didn't know he was second generation.
His dad wasn't really anybody you know of. Is TC Brimstone from Omega, Championship Wrestling? But he grew up around like the Hardy Boys, Champagne, Shannon Moore, all those guys. So his upbringing was around a lot of guys who were really good wrestlers. So it's going to kind of...
And it's kind of like Chris Candido's grandfather was like Popeye Chuck Wilson or something like that. Someone you wouldn't really know, but he grew up around it, right? So
that's what I was saying. If there was someone like that who also had the physical gifts, I could... But even then, I still think that they wouldn't you know, trust someone. I just thought, like, oh, this would be an interesting topic. I worked on it. I pulled up the dates. I was going through everybody. I was even including the first champion, because he's technically the youngest champion as the first champion. Buddy Rogers, I think he was, like, almost in his 40s when he won, so it was kind of ridiculous to consider him a youngest champ, but, you know, technically he was.
Well, and then you can start looking at youngest headliner, too, right? Like, Argentina Rock, I don't think, would quite hit that, but, definitely you go back to Jim Longo, so I'm not sure how young he was when he started.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I just thought it was an interesting topic, and I lost momentum and was just kind of thinking, like, I don't know if I'm this thoughtful, introspective guy who can work on projects like this. So I really appreciate reading the stuff that you put together, and I thought that the stuff about the Sharps was
Thanks,
really great.
I've actually gotten into this crazy habit recently, because I had a lot of fun last year of putting together match lists of guys like Akira Taue and Volkan. I did a lot of writing on last year. I just start putting together match lists of guys to put, and like I don't even watch them. I just enjoyed putting together huge match lists of, like, Sabu, I mean, those have been done a lot, but I did one of at Sushi Onita and stuff like that, right? And I don't know why I find it fun, but I find the digging fun is what it is.
That's part of it. I my wife worked at Amoeba Records, and she's worked at, like, record stores her whole life, right? So I kind of go to record stores with her, and I watch her do the same thing, and we have so much vinyl in the apartment, and every time we go somewhere where she can, you know, shop through a bunch of crates and stuff, she gets super into it. So I just totally know that that's the thing. Unfortunately for me, I've had this aversion to physical media. So for me, like what you're doing, where you're kind of like digging through results and stuff like that, is a little bit more my speed, a little bit more my style.
Yeah,
but you really kind of reminded me of something that I completely forgot there when you talked about writing for The Observer. I didn't remember that, and then as you said it, like, I put your name to the byline, because I'm so bad about keeping track of that kind of stuff. I remember you writing for The Observer, and I completely forgot that you were the same guy. So that was ridiculous.
Oh, okay.
So I think anybody else who's listening to this, they may maybe have the same thing, and they'll remember that. Oh yeah, I remember Dave Musgrave writing for The Observer back then, doing the ROH reports.
Yeah, and I mean, they'll still, like, I don't know, like, I think, I can't think the most recent time I've had it happen, but if I, like, I'll write something for them, they'll still refer to me as staff, and, like, I don't know, it was cool to me the first time I saw that they referred to me as
that. Yeah, no, that's definitely cool. There's one thing I forgot, so I gotta ask you before we, kind of officially move
absolutely.
On.
Absolutely, yeah.
Kind of going back to the first segment, what would you say is either your favorite or the episode of wrestling culture that you're kind of the most proud of?
I think the one I'm most proud of is the first time we interviewed Pat LaPrade. I thought that was really good. It kind of really got made Pat. I think we gave Pat a little visibility among our group of people. But more so, like, I thought it was a really good conversation among, you know, I didn't know Pat that well by that point, and Dylan had never talked to him at all and didn't know that much about him, and the three of us just really gelled well together. My favorite would probably be, even though it's really early on and I wasn't very good as far as audio goes yet, and who knows if I am out, was either the episode with Kurt about the Wackiest Gimmicks, and then there's one we did that I thought for something that was supposed to be a fun episode, I thought it was really good, where we basically pretended we had a time machine that we could go back and, you, like, had an app on our phone that we could go back and record any match that we wanted. And we talked about what our top 10 matches would be for that. So, like, Gotch, Hackenschmidt is an easy one. That kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's actually a really interesting idea. And it's...
Yeah, and we had a lot of technical issues on it, which made it even more fun, because Dylan was joking with the messing with the space-time continuum and stuff, so...
Yeah, well, and on top of it, too, like, that's something that is so of a bygone era now, if you think about it. Imagine kind of explaining that to a modern wrestling fan, like, the concept of wrestling that doesn't make tape, you know, or that you couldn't, that you can't
find. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, sure, there's the AWE kind of crisis that everyone's in the middle of complaining about how much it sucks that their stuff doesn't make tape or doesn't come out, even if it is taped. But it's like, Yeah, think about, there's house show matches that I kind of, I'll look through old results from, especially because I'm out here now and I are living in LA proper. I've always grown up in Southern California, but being in LA proper, I've kind of like taken to looking up some old stuff, like from the Grand Olympic, which I've only gone to like one show there ever, and looking up the old championship wrestling from Hollywood from like the 70s, 80s, and some of those matches, and I'm like, there's no way I'll ever find any of it. And it just sounds like such great stuff to see as like a slice of kind of my city. I don't know about you, but I even though I've only lived in LA for like 5 years or so at this point, I do kind of feel like I take some pride in it. This is my city. I don't know if you get the same thing from Toronto, being not a native there.
Yeah, I absolutely do. It's very similar. And the big one for me, because nationally, this is what was broadcast, was stuff from Toronto when my dad was a kid. And, something I've talked about on the show a lot is one that I would absolutely love to find video of, and I do believe it exists, is the famous Whipper Billy Watson, Gorgeous George, Hair versus, I don't know if it was Hair versus Title. I think it was Hair versus Career. And it was just famous. I think that was the first match where Gorgeous George shaved his head. And, you know, it's sad because he was, you know, an alcoholic who was down on his luck and needing money, but it's still a pretty legendary match around here. And, I would love to be able to find footage of it.
Yeah, no, and that's another one, Ripper Billy Watson, I've seen, like, almost none of. Is there a lot of his matches on tape, even, that you can find?
Very little. I do think, I've heard that there's actually an archive of old Toronto wrestling, like with, I don't know if it's CBC or somewhere, but no one's ever gotten the rights to it.
And then also at this point, you got to think about film degradation. Some of that stuff is going to just fall apart.
Yeah.
Even if you do find it. Well, we'll take another quick break and we'll get into kind of some Dave personal stuff.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here. In addition to the archives of The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's Past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. All of this in addition to Scott Keith's Podcast of Doom, which includes discussions on questions from listeners, as well as current day and old school wrestling. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows are available on PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, Dave, so this is the part, of the show that I kind of like the most, I think, just talking about you outside. I mean, I do love getting into talking to people who I'm a fan of about their projects and what they work on, but I also, the whole point of having this show is to get to know people who I've only heard their voices on podcasts, you know, and I feel like other people Absolutely. Probably want the same thing, so that's why instead of just doing a private Skype call between me and you, we record it and put it out for everybody to listen to. So, I don't know, that's just... You said where you grew up was kind of similar to Detroit, correct?
Well, it's very small. So it's very similar to the Midwest is probably the way to put it. It's very small town.
And it used to be kind of an industry because, is it on the ocean or it's on a port?
I grew up like two streets from the ocean.
I'm sorry.
So it's all very much a port. Cape Breton Island is where I grew up.
And it
up,
is an island or?
Yep. There's a causeway, but, Yeah, it's so some people debate whether you could still consider it an island, but it absolutely
So it's, yeah, is. Like a, what is it, like a land bar that kind of takes you from one, okay.
Yeah.
And is that in the Maritimes, or is that...
That's in the Maritimes, yeah. It's so Maritimes is basically comprised of three provinces, which is Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, and PEI, Prince Edward Island. And so, yeah, and then the Atlantic provinces are basically considered to be those three provinces plus Newfoundland. I think the difference is that the Maritimes is basically what was it was always referred to before Newfoundland joined Canada. And I think that's when they started calling it the Atlantic provinces. So just kind of distinguishing between the two. My hometown is where you get the ferry to Newfoundland. It's the only place you can do it. And that's kind of, that's very much my, that's the big business in my hometown is the ferry.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I was going to get into that next. I'm like, what was the business that kind of, I guess, dried up, if you will, that was there? And it was...
Well, that's the business specifically in my hometown. The businesses that have dried up, probably the biggest one would probably be coal mining. The coal basically has a lot of sulfur in it there. And there's actually, that's some people think it's controversial if that's really what the issue was. It was just a lot of, you know, industry coming in, reaping everything they could, and then leaving everyone behind eventually. Fishing stocks have really been affected and... in past decades as well. The cod stocks have really been negatively affected. And, yeah, those are the two big ones where
So you say it's controversial, but is it controversial in that, like, the science? Because I feel like they could just test the coal. Or is it controversial that there being a lot of sulfur in the coal is what affected kind of everything kind of drying up?
It's controversial, but whether that's what affected it. I've heard the steel plant that was there was, like, profitable right up till the end. Some people think it could still be successful. Some people think it just moved on. I think my uncle, who was a geologist, I'd say he probably had some, good insight on it. He said that was the issue. Other people who worked in the field would say that's not what the issue was and that it was just government mismanagement. Either way, it really sucks. It's a lot of people I'll put it this way. When I graduated high school in 1993 and there was 1,500 people in my high school, and that same high school now, and that's for three grades, 10 to 12. That same high school now has what, 700 or 800
people.
Oh, jeez. So, yeah. So the people, young people, don't stay.
All right. Well, let's. Now I got to get to the bottom of this. So let's get this geologist uncle. You think he's got Skype capabilities? You think he's up now? Let's wake him up and get him on here. We gotta hash this out.
Man.
I need Uncle Musgrave on the line.
That would be fascinating getting he's an Ash actually, and getting him on here was, yeah, if you want to hear some redneck talk. I mean, he's a pretty smart guy, but he's actually pretty fascinating because he actually lived in Uganda and probably about 5 to 10 years before I was born. And no, he didn't know Kamala. But he actually did play rugby with Edie.
Oh, wow. That's way cooler.
Yeah, isn't it? And
jeez.
Actually, I think Edie Amin was part of getting him out of the country when everything went to hell. I mean, even though it was from him.
Yeah, that's...
And then the other thing is when he went to university at St. Evex University in Scotia, which is where I went, actually, for my undergrad, he actually was on the debate team with the name you wouldn't know, but anyone in Canada would know the name. His name was Brian Mulroney. He was later the Prime Minister of Canada. So, yeah, my Uncle Walter managed to, rub shoulders with some pretty important
people.
Yeah,
that's really interesting. So you grow up in this small town. When you're there, the kind of had – by the time you were growing up,
those businesses were drying up as
gotcha.
I was growing
so
up.
So you didn't ever think you were going to work down at the coal mine, I'm going to guess.
Oh, no, by no means. My dad was a social worker, and I went into a similar field.
Got it. So you kind of you took up the family business, I guess. Luckily, business is always booming when it comes to kind of that field.
Yeah, it never dries up, sadly.
Unfortunately. So from there, I guess this is a weird one. Okay.
Go ahead. Yeah.
What were you?
I was going to say, I mean, I went to university, but it was only 2 hours away from where I grew up first time around. But I went away and did my psychology degree. Then I moved back to Cape Breton after that and worked in group homes and stuff. And that's that period of time, like that was 1996. I mean, fandom hit another level then for wrestling. Later on in 2000, I actually moved up to Ontario and I did my social work degree. So and then I later did my bachelor's in social work, and then I later did my master's as well. So that's how I ended up in Ontario, and I met my wife up here and ended up staying, and my parents are no longer alive down there, so I don't go down to visit as much now.
Oh, that's tough.
It was pretty bad.
So was there ever kind of that, I was gonna ask before we kind of got into it, but what were the ideas? What were you going to do? You weren't going to work in the coal mine, obviously, but you kind of, like you said, followed in your father's footsteps in some ways.
In high school, my idea was either to be – this is actually something that would probably be a surprise to most people who listen to my show. It was either to go into social work or to be a musician, because I actually play piano.
Oh, that's really interesting. See, now that should have been saved for the end, because I don't know if you're familiar with the show, but that's usually my closing question. What would surprise people who only listen to your podcast? So we'll edit. We'll take that piece out and edit it for the end. We'll have to come up with another. But so I guess now you tell me the idea was, you know, social work or working or playing piano. You said music, so I was thinking, oh, okay, perfect. This will lead into my idea, because I was going to ask about kind of like, was there the angsty Dave Musgrave? Was there a time when you were filled with vim and vinegar and you're kind of like, fuck you guys, I'm going to do this, and it was something else crazy? Or it doesn't sound like it to me. It sounds like it was always kind of, you were on a path, and it seems like a pretty good path, and you went down it pretty well. Did you ever have a rebellious phase at all?
My rebellious phase was probably moving to Toronto, because everyone's like, oh my god, Toronto's crazy. It's like, you'll get pickpocketed all the time and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, I'm going to Toronto because I'm tough enough to be up there. And I actually had people tell me that I was too nice a guy to live up here and stuff like that. It's pretty hilarious. Anyone who actually lives here thinks that's hilarious. But I mean, people in the Maritimes maybe talk about Toronto, like people in Toronto talk about people in America.
And probably how us in LA talk about people in New York.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, like everyone will joke here about how people from America are like, oh, you're from Canada, I knew a guy from BC and stuff like that. And I'm like, yeah, but people in Ontario do that to me about out east, right? So
I guess that's true. So, okay, so you decided you're going to move to the big city. Is Toronto the biggest, or is it the second biggest city in Canada?
No, it's the biggest. Yeah, it's Toronto.
So you decided you're going to move to the big city. Now, that just made me think about something which I didn't really, never really crossed my mind. But the crime. So the crime, kind of overall in America, shot down quite a bit after they took the lead out of the gasoline, right? And there was a lot less violent crime in general because lead poisoning was driving people crazy and making them commit violent crimes. Was it ever like that? Was Toronto a scary place with higher crime rates before, or has it been about that?
It has a reputation of that. I'll put it this way. This is how I size it up. Like, you know, there's more violent gun crime here than there might be in the area of Nova Scotia that I'm from. But I grew up in Nova Scotia. Like, I had strangers, like, as a teenager, I had strangers punch me in the stomach walking down the street. I've never had that happen in Toronto, probably because they think you have a gun.
That works.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. I don't have strangers challenge me to fights up here, and that happened all the time where I grew up. So.
That's a good point.
You know, it's a pretty good trade-off, you know?
I find city life, for me, because I grew up in a place probably not dissimilar from where you were at. Honestly, where I grew up is a little bit different.
Yeah, and I'm very much in the suburbs now as well, which is a difference.
Right, so. I find that city life, there's a lot less triviality, like you're saying. Like someone just going like, oh, I'm just going to fight you on the street. You find a lot less of that here because so many people are just trying to scrape to get by, let alone like trying to start shit with a random person on the street. So it's just not even worth it. So
you're living in
in LA proper.
That must be awesome.
It's really nice. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, it's really cool. I'm going to PBG this weekend for Bola, and
that's really awesome.
In like a month or two, some random indie out here is running Pentagon Jr. versus Rob Van Dam. So there's just like there's so much cool stuff. Plus, I think I told you in the Twitter conversation as we're setting up the show, but like tonight we had to set our recording time back a little bit because randomly my wife had forgot that she was going to a Go-Go's concert tonight, you know. And so it's like, that's the cool thing about LA, there's just so much going on and you can legitimately find whatever you're into at all times, and just kind of there's so much going on that you forget about how much stuff is going on. So there's a theater less than a block away from our apartment that runs like awesome comedy shows and, you know, cool music and stuff like that. And we forget to check the website to even like go to the events because there's just so much to do. LA is pretty great. I recommend that no one else move here, though. There's already too many. We don't need you. Stay where you're at. You're not going to make it big in Hollywood. Just, you know, if you're in Wisconsin, just stay in Wisconsin. It's okay. But for me, it's fantastic.
I just wanted to mention, as far as cool matches that are coming up in my area, I'm going to Smash versus Progress. They're bringing a bunch of Progress guys to Smash, which is, I don't refer to it as the PWG of Toronto. It's not quite there by any means, but it's good stuff. And I'm going to get to see Mike Bailey versus Mark Haskins.
That's so good. And so you get...
And Tyson Dukes versus Zack Sabre Jr. God, on the same.
They're going to have such a better match than they had in that CWC. That's another one. Tyson Dukes, another guy that I always heard you talking about that no one else I had known had heard of them that wasn't Gideon, you know. So that was always awesome.
Yeah, he's good. He's a good guy, too, he seems So I actually asked a question when he was going to be having a European rounds match about I asked a question about his influences with European wrestling and brought up, like, Mark Rocco and Johnny Saint, and I mentioned name dropped a couple other guys. He was so excited that someone there actually asked that question.
That's great.
Because, you know, everything else, no one else was asking questions at all like that.
No, but luckily you still get to see Speedball too. That's another one. We don't get him anymore.
I'm hoping that changes. I'm hoping somehow he's able to get past that legal hurdle. I even open borders.
Yeah, me too, actually. You know what? What we're going to do is we're going to take another quick break. I think this is the last one we need to do. And then maybe we'll get into some politics and some stuff like that, because I haven't really gotten into stuff like that since Stephen Graham, so it feels weird. It feels like all I do is talk to Canadians about politics.
Oh, well, and just to mention, Stephen's a friend of mine, and yeah, he would definitely love to talk politics.
Yeah, so we'll take a break. We'll come back, and you know what? I think we're just going to do it.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the Reaction Shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We've got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Team's Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
All right, Dave. So, yeah, I don't want people to think that I just pigeonhole all Canadians into talking politics with me just because I know that they'll probably agree with me on most parts. But we are going to get – I think we should just get into it to begin with. So I kind of understand you guys have a parliamentary governmental system, correct? And
absolutely.
So you guys don't technically have to register for parties as a voter, right?
No, I have no idea. That concept really throws me. I have no idea why anyone has to do
such. It's such a weird construct, and a lot of states are getting rid of it, but I think originally the idea, and this sounds really fucking stupid that it was even allowed, was there was, and you probably still can do it, is you can just, like, vote across party line. on your ballot, instead of taking the time to just mark all the Republicans, if you're a registered Republican, you can just mark vote for all Republicans and it just does it for you. And, like, I know that sounds fucking ridiculous, right? Because why would they accept a vote for you not even saying for sure who you're voting for? But that was a thing here. So I guess if you had to register, what party up there, what party in Canada do you feel you align most with?
It's tough to say because definitely not conservative. I'm far from that. It's usually either the Liberal or it's always either the Liberal or NDP party. So I assume Stephen probably would have went into this, but Liberals are pretty close to your Democrats. Yeah. And then the NDP is supposed to be your Socialist Party. In recent years, they've kind of gotten pretty far away from the left just in trying to get elected. And that's kind of my struggle with them is, you know, they've kind of started to become a party that tries to get elected more so than trying to stand by what brought them to the dance. So, but you know, they've definitely been a part of forcing things to the left at times. And I applaud them for that. And I'm a fan of Justin Trudeau.
Okay. And he's part of what you said would be like the Socialist.
He's a Liberal. Yeah, he's with the Liberal. With the Liberal government.
And yeah. Do you guys have a Labour Party or a Green Party?
We have a Green Party, but there's only one person elected from it.
And that's even in Parliament?
Yeah, I mean, that's in Parliament, yeah. That's in the federal government. So the biggest way I can explain like what it's like to be in a parliamentary system is I barely understand Congress and Senate and what the difference is supposed to be. But basically imagine if your only government was, say, Congress or Senate, and whoever's leader for the majority party was your president. That's basically
And Stephen did get into that, and I somewhat understand the parliamentary system pretty well. There's some things that throw me for a loop, I think, but for the most part, I get it. Here's a question I didn't even thought of, though. Do you guys have, like, governors for the parliaments, I guess, would be the... like, we have a governor who's, like, the president of the state. Do you guys have that for the provinces?
We basically have a provincial parliament in each province.
Okay, and so the provincial parliament also has a leader who would then essentially be, like, what we call the governor.
Yeah, but it's essentially instead of having like you guys have a state set and then the governor is a separate system from that, right? The governor is elected separately. Yeah. The premier here is essentially like the governor, except it's the leader of the majority party.
Okay, that system always makes most sense to me, but I guess it doesn't work for us in America for some reason.
Yeah, well, you can end up having someone who is premier who's never elected as that if like one premier steps down. And then they elect a new leader. So our current premier in Ontario, she is elected now, but prior to that hadn't been elected as premier. So like the previous premier resigned. So then they picked a new leader of the party, and that person became premier of the province.
Which I guess, because of
that, and that can happen with the prime minister.
Right. That happens similar with us, but like. I guess we have the idea that we understand the chain of command or whatever, how it goes, or chain of succession and how it goes if, like, someone resigns or passes away in America. But I guess it can feel more like we knew what we were getting ourselves into because we vote for a president-vice president kind of combo. But I don't think people really think about voting for deputy, you know, governor, deputy mayor, and realizing that kind of they're in the chain of command for replacing if something weird happened. So... yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and you know, I'm a fan of the parliamentary system. I mean, a lot of people in the U.S. complain that that it's a two-party system, and we have at least three-party system. It's been more times. It's more now, honestly, because the Bloc Québécois is a big part of things. They basically represent Québécois interests for the province of Quebec. And the Green Party only has one seat, but they have a lot of influence. You know, they've gotten a lot of influence in recent years, especially for one seat.
So, all right. So this just kind of I don't know if it's necessarily, like, something that's been nagging at me, but something I've been thinking about. And then I kind of thought about it right now, and I'm going to maybe frame it in a way that would feel almost like it could be a topic or an episode of wrestling culture. Because, you know, I got you on the line, so I might as well try it, right? And then it plays into the Lucha thing. So, you said you're more liberal, obviously. You're a liberal-minded person. You know, mentioned being in social work and kind of, I think people understand what goes with that. And I would assume that you care about social issues, social justice, social stuff like that. Like, you know, people's equal rights for all people.
Yeah,
when it comes
totally.
Into the Lucha culture, because, okay, so I know that a lot of Canada, it's like America, but just a little bit less diverse, correct? Like, I'm not out of left field saying that.
It's less diverse as far as the Hispanic culture goes, but Toronto is probably the most, one of the most diverse countries in the world, cities in the world.
So, you know, yeah.
Yeah. And other cities like Montreal, Calgary, all those, the cities are diverse.
Okay. So I just wonder in your day-to-day life where you're at, how much do you interact with kind of what I feel like is the, it's really the modern day civil rights kind of movement of the moment, which is like transgender people in general. How many rights, what kind of protection you guys really have? And then, like I said, the wrestling culture twinge to it is, how do you feel about the Exotico Templar wrestler? Is it offensive to transgendered people? Is it, you know, it's wrestling, it's just a character, it's not a big deal? What do you think? Like, I kind of want to pick that apart with you a little bit. What do you, you know, where do you stand? How much interaction do you have? Do you find in Toronto, because here in Los Angeles and in all of California, most of America, it feels like, you know, transgender is becoming more normalized. Are you seeing that up there where you're at?
Definitely is it's definitely becoming more normalized, and you definitely meet a lot more people who are coming out as transgender. I know recently I did, I was downtown Toronto for work quite a bit, and right in the gay neighborhood, and it was transgender people were everywhere there. I mean, it's the area, the city that they would flock to, and it was so cool. It was just cool to see people getting to be themselves like that. The suburbs, not quite as much, but you definitely see a lot more. As far as the Exotico template, it's really hard to say. I mean, I'd probably have to ask someone who's transgender what they would think. I think there's potential there for it to be offensive, and maybe a little dated. But at the same time, I think a lot of people, if someone was enough of a wrestling fan to know what an Exotico was, they'd probably be okay with it. And if someone wasn't enough, they'd probably just say it's stupid wrestling, right? But it's definitely an interesting question.
Yeah, I wonder, like, you personally, and I don't know how familiar you are, but there's almost some kind of modern day Exoticos in Japan, kind of going on a lot more often now, that are not even just like that stereotypical effeminate character. They're like legitimately transgendered.
Really? I wasn't quite sure.
Yeah, there's at
with
least
that.
One that's really well known was Yosuke Santa Maria in Dragon
Ball. Oh, yeah.
But then there's also
but in that's a legitimately transgendered wrestler.
That's the thing. I don't know if they are or not, or if it's just a character, because the wrestler was a male wrestler before they went on excursion to Mexico, so it almost feels like they picked up the character from Exoticos in Mexico.
Yeah.
And then there's also Rainbow Kanemura, who's in the DNA primarily, is a DDT kind of student who doesn't necessarily play an effeminate male character, but really comes across more like an Exotico or a transgendered character. So, you know, that's kind of going on in Japan, and it's kind of spreading, and it almost feels like you said it's a dated construct. So the idea that now it's spreading and almost catching a second life is, I don't know if it's problematic or troubling to, that's why I'm wondering, like,
well, I think it depends on what it is, right? Like, if it's celebrating transgender or if it's making fun of it,
right? And it, they don't,
and some of it probably blurs the lines.
It does, and that's the part that's tough, I think, because nothing's black and white, right? Even characters that just straight up straight male character in wrestling, like your kind of prototypical tough guy wrestler, they'll do maybe a comedy spot here and there that plays off of anything. It doesn't even have to be a gender specific thing, but just a, this is a funny spot. And then when you then put that in, though, sometimes people, I think, can then try to attack it as saying that it's offensive, but it's like, it's still just a comedy spot, and it's not necessarily...
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's been an evolution, right? Like, you look at B.B. Hulk, had some real effeminate characteristics. And then, have you ever heard of a wrestler who came out of, like, the Toramon? Like, not like the classic Toramon that led to Dragon Gate, but kind of, like, later the more Okada-type era of Amigo Suzuki?
No, I'm actually not familiar.
Yeah, I mean, that's someone that I saw when the Toram did some stuff with UWA Hardcore up here. I mean, it was a very cool... a fun, effeminate dancing character, and the fans were going nuts.
Yeah, and it's, I guess if it's fun, it's just, that's why I wonder, where is it taking advantage, and where is it fine? I don't know. For you personally, because I don't know, have you watched a lot of Lucha? I know Dylan watches a lot of Lucha, and I know that you do stuff with him, but I don't ever know if you're like a big Lucha fan yourself.
I do like Lucha. I'll go through spurts where I try to watch as much Rush as I can. I don't keep up with as much as Dylan, but what I'll tend to do is when it comes to watching year-end stuff, I'll try to catch as much of the best stuff as
I can. Well, even classic stuff. I mean, did you ever find Exotico stuff that you've seen to be offensive? No.
No, I haven't. I think Cassandra was actually great.
Right, because it just feels so... And Cassandra's one that's such a great argument for it, because...
And actually a role model. Probably.
Yeah, because a lot of times Cassandra really feels to me like that's not... It's not putting on a character for the show as much as it is really kind of how they are all the time. You know, I mean, obviously everyone turns it up for their performance, but doesn't seem uncomfortable like someone said, put on this women's clothes and just act like a woman. It feels more like completely comfortable with the whole concept of it. I don't know, I feel like there's a lot of trans issues coming out now. It's such a big deal, and I just wonder if there's still a place for that in wrestling, or if there isn't, you know?
I think it needs to be a modernized version, for sure.
Right.
Like, if someone legitimately transgender becomes star, I think that's awesome.
Right. And is that something... Do you think that there's any way that they could push a mainstream transgendered wrestling star?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, I would love to see something like that. That'd be so cool. Because, I mean, I think that there's at least grumblings of a transgendered kind of MMA fighter coming out, because I think someone may have tweeted something that was a little bit unfortunate recently about that, comparing domestic violence to a transgendered MMA fighter, which is a little bit unfair. But so I don't know if there actually has even been a fight or not. But
who would have thought the tweet... Twitter and MMA could lead to something stupid.
Yeah, exactly, right? That's really shocking. But it's such an interesting paradigm. Like I said, it's really the modern day kind of civil rights fight of our era right now is for the trans. And that's not to belittle to say that, you know, there isn't still plenty of stuff that needs to be done for black people and for gay people and really for a lot of different groups of people.
Oh, yeah, no. It's just, it's... There's been no question for a long time that, you know, those are civil rights issues. It's just that this is a burgeoning as something that is a civil rights issue. And that wasn't thought of beforehand.
Yeah, and I don't even... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And, I mean, people are still learning about it. And, you know, I think we're all learning about it. I think even transgender people are learning about what it is to be transgender all the time. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's just good to know that it is. I mean, I know that there's at least a sitcom that's on, you know, major cable television that's kind of based around that here. I don't know if you guys get it up there, and just knowing,
what's it called?
Transparent.
Oh yeah, I've heard that's amazing.
Yeah,
I haven't watched it, but I hear it's amazing.
And it's so good just to know that kids are getting to see that and having role models that maybe they can relate to and go like, oh, you know what, that's kind of how I feel. Which is really awesome that, you know, that more people can get exposed to it and have that kind of chance to, I don't know, to see.
Yeah, well, and Degrassi had a major transgender character, and I think that probably did a lot to help, at least in Canada. And, I mean, Degrassi's pretty popular in the U.S. as well.
Yeah, so. I loved that show when I was younger and watched TV that wasn't wrestling. But that feels like that was, you know, for it.
Back in the
day. That was forever ago at this point. But no, it's just, the reason why it's such an issue, too, is just that, I don't know what, that's what I was going to ask you, and I almost forgot it, was, like, what the protections are there, because I feel like, I remember reading or knowing that the protections here for, like, equal rights don't protect for transgendered people here in America at all, in any way. Like, there isn't protection that employers can't discriminate against you for being transgender. You know, they're not required to, you know, respect that side. And I don't know if you know specifically, like in Canada or Toronto specifically, if there is some protections for that.
It's something that's increasing and is ever increasing as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, like you'll see trans-inclusive washrooms a lot in workplaces. And yeah, it's definitely, there's a lot long way to go, but it's definitely, the awareness is there, and certainly our current government is definitely in favor of trans rights. So
that's awesome. I mean, hopefully we can get there, yeah. Both countries and all that. But
I mean, and that's now, I'll tell you, like the previous conservative government we had wouldn't necessarily have been that favorable of it. Like they. The conservative government we had until last fall was trying to ban women being able to wear the hijab in public in certain spaces. So, I mean, that's, and they actually called it the, I think the act to end barbaric cultural practices, which is like,
God, that's so
Yeah, Canada is not all rainbows and gumdrops. You know, like we've come a long way in the past year, but we had a pretty nasty government in place there for a while.
Yeah, well, so. We won't hold it against you. We had George Bush for a long time too, both George Bushes actually.
Yeah, well, and we'll see what November.
Yeah,
brings.
God, I'm really concerned about that. I don't think there's any way Trump can win. I know.
I don't.
Yeah, you guys, maybe people in Canada think like, oh God, what's wrong with these people? Because he's, I guess, technically the nominee for the second or one of the biggest parties in the country. But there's no way. There's no way. I can't let myself believe it, or else I might lose my mind.
And he's quite far behind now.
Yes.
As well, so.
Hopefully, all the kind of bigots are going to be able, and misogynists are going to be able to kind of put aside their hate for women and just vote for Hillary anyways. But yeah. So I feel like I kind of hijacked that they're talking about social issues.
Oh yeah.
But like,
that's so good. I love social issues. Social justice. I read about social justice all the time.
Yeah. I guess my point more was not that I didn't think you're interested in that, but like I kind of hijacked it with an issue that, I mean, I'm not trying to say you don't think of, but like, what is there any issue that you're like super passionate about, maybe, or anything like that? I mean, I don't know.
Mental health is a big thing. Okay. Like just mental health awareness and rights. I actually had the privilege last fall to meet someone that you might not recognize the name. Her name is Clara Hughes. She's a Canadian Olympian. She's I'm not sure if she's the only Canadian to do it, or maybe. If she's not the only person to do it, there's probably not that many, where she's been a multi-time medalist in both Canadian and Summer Olympics.
Okay.
So she's won more than one medal as a cyclist, and then she's won more than one medal as a speed skater as well.
Wow.
So yeah. And around the time that she was finishing up after the 2010 Olympics in Vancouver, she came out as having always struggled with mental health, and she now is a national advocate for it, a campaigner for Bell is the telephone company, the major telephone company in Canada, or at least in like this area of Canada. And there's a national campaign for Bell Let's Talk, which is Let's Talk About Mental Health. Every year, January 28th is their Bell Let's Talk Day, and she's their national spokesperson. And I had the like awesome experience of getting to meet her last year for her book launch, got her to sign it and talked about it, and talked about my own feelings about mental health. And actually she was introduced by, have you ever heard of Off the Record up here?
Yeah, I have actually.
It's Michael Lansford.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well he's interviewed wrestlers all the time.
Right, yeah. He used to like in the 90s and stuff. Is he still?
Yeah, no, not now because it got canceled in the last year. But he's also someone who's come out and spoken about his own experiences with depression. And he's a friend of hers and introduced her. So I got to him as well, and he was fantastic. So
yeah, it is a really important issue, and just an anecdote. God, I think I just kind of had the Canadian accent rub off on me. I'm sorry for being offensive even saying that.
That's all good.
But just an anecdote that happened recently with me, or not with me, but that I heard from someone, is that they kind of disclosed to their boss that, because I work in the healthcare profession, so I kind of hear stories from everyone. They disclosed to their boss that they had issues with mental health, not extreme issues, just they took a mood stabilizing drug regularly. They've been taking it for years. There's no issues. It just helps them, you know, not feel miserable all the time. And days later, when there was an issue at work, the boss responded saying, "Hey, oh, does this have something to do with those drugs that you have to take?" And it's just, it's so sad that for me, especially, like I said, I work in healthcare, and I'll even, you know, just say what it is. I've said it plenty of times. I work in pharmaceuticals. Directly, I work in pharmacy.
Okay.
And so I know what these things do, what they are, what's important, you know, which ones are like extreme, which ones aren't. But I also know that, like, no matter what drug you're on, that doesn't dictate in any way who you are. Taking an antipsychotic, taking an antidepressant, and taking an antibiotic are all the fucking same. You're just taking meds to help you feel better, and it doesn't necessarily denote who you are as a person. I've met plenty of really crazy people who didn't take any drugs, and I've met some of the most sane and understanding people who also did, like I said, take antipsychotic medications, anti-seizure medications, medications that you would think are only for loony bin kind of people if you're closed-minded, and they're really not. So, yeah, I think mental health is such a big deal and needs to be normalized. Because it's hard enough to have mental issues. It's even harder to then have to think about that you're not allowed to have mental issues, you know?
Yeah, and I think we, just because of Bellot's talk, it's come a long way in Canada, with obviously a long way to go. It's one of those things where you can never get far enough, really. But Clara Hughes is someone who has made a difference. And anyone who's listening should Google her. She's amazing. And she has made a difference. And I agree with absolutely everything you said. You know, like it's all about what's normalized to what your normative experiences are, right? Like that person boss might have thought that is weird to be in the mood stabilizing drugs, but they might have gone and used alcohol that might have had that weekend that had much more of an impact than these drugs do, right?
Exactly. Or out here, if you're in beautiful Southern California, marijuana, who everybody seems to be totally fine with and think that it's cool, but...
Oh, and they love it here, cloudy Ontario as well, so...
Yes. All right, Dave. Well, I gave you the pre-warning before. Lately, I've been trying to give people even longer. So we are going to have to hear what someone who only knows you from your podcast, or maybe even someone who knows you from, you know, the stuff that you've the long-form pieces about the Sharp Brothers, or also even if they go all the way back of reading from The Observer, but like kind of something that would surprise them or that they would have no clue about you outside life, outside of the wrestling world. But I also forgot that what I'm really supposed to ask at the beginning of the episode is, are you now or have you ever been a member of the PWO board?
I am a member of the board.
Yes. Actually. And what is your username on PWO?
Puropods.
Got it. And I'm just laughing because I think it's kind of laughable that someone who hosts Wrestling Culture wouldn't be on the board. But that has been my opening question, and I've dropped it many, many times. So, Dave, what would someone be surprised to hear about Dave Musgrave outside of the world of wrestling, podcasting, and journalism?
I think I've mentioned it on the air before. So, I mean, I am ex-military with the Canadian Reserves. But I think I've talked about that before. But I think the thing that probably relevant, since I do audio, that people would find most surprising is that I did have a speech impediment as a child.
Oh.
And, yeah, I didn't actually talk till I was 4, and I was in speech therapy till I was 9. So.
Wow, jeez. If you don't mind me asking, like, what was it?
Just delayed speech.
Oh, okay, that was it.
Basically, that's exactly what it was. So, I mean, I refer to it as a speech impediment, but yeah, I had a speech delay as a child, and my dad had a similar one, and he kind of he kind of always traced it to that his went away when he got his tonsils out, and so did mine. Maybe some hearing kind of connected to that, but yeah, I definitely did tons of speech therapy. So
really, that's actually really interesting. And see, okay, so I'm just gonna quickly sidebar off of that, because it does play into what we were talking about, is that I've seen a lot of people freak out about delayed speech in kids, assuming that they're, you know, on the spectrum because they're not talking soon enough. And
yeah,
I mean,
it definitely would have been asked with me in this day and age, and developmental delays were asked about as well. But I've got graduate level studies.
So yeah,
I've done.
That's what I was gonna say. I mean, maybe some of your obsession with coming up with these match lists in wrestling might be on the spectrum a little bit.
Perhaps we're in the middle of diagnosing.
Yes, but no, I mean, like I said, having this conversation with you, hearing you talk about your work and your kind of passion for health issues in general and just everything, it's like, no, that doesn't sound like someone on the spectrum. So this is another one where it just kind of comes back. It's like bits and pieces of people don't denote who they are. People just are who they are holistically, and you have to step back and take that kind of look at it. And it plays back into wrestling culture, looking at wrestling more holistically. And yes, you break down the minutia, but you break down the minutia in a way where you're picking apart parts of wrestling that are more big picture that people don't realize or don't think about. It's not all about kind of giant guys and unitards beating each other up. There's so much more to it. So, Dave, is there anything I'll plug? I kind of already got the hype train going earlier, just how excited I am for the next episode of Wrestling Culture to come out. You got anything else coming out soon?
I did, with all the SummerSlam goings on, I tried to review pretty much every show. I got to everything from that weekend. I didn't do the actual SummerSlam recap for PTBN, but I did two Evolve shows. I did Ring of Honor. I know I got another show in there. I managed to do the Super J Cup show from July. I managed to, in the same couple days, get the 2015 and 2016 Scenic City Invitationals reviewed. I was on vacation, so that helped with a lot of this. And that's finally broken, and just couldn't get the J Cup finals done. But I got a lot of reviews done within a few days. So check me out over at Place to Be Nation, and I tend to go in spurts with my writing there, and Brad's pretty cool about it. And I'm really looking forward to talking to some Hall of Fame pretty
nice.
Soon.
All right. Well, everyone knows, as always, This Week in Wrestling will be back out. By the time you're listening to this, a new episode will have come out. We've got this. We've got a shot coming out Friday after you're listening to this, where me and Adrian are going to be talking some random beers that are delicious. Follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead. Follow Dave at Puro Pazzi on Twitter as well, correct?
Or you can find Wrestling Culture.
Yeah. Oh, is it Wrestling Culture? Or, yeah.
But yeah, at Puro Pazzi is probably the easiest way. PuroPotsy.
Yeah, and if you haven't, go back and listen to all the Wrestling Cultures, because they're all just amazing. Well, Dave, thank you so much, and I guess... Oh, yeah, I'm supposed to say, good beer, good butt, good banter, but I don't know if that's the closer for this show. I gotta come up with a different branding for this show. Either way, Dave, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much.